Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good morning and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we've got another great show for you today with our guest, Dave Fish. Dave is the head coach at Harvard. He's the men's coach there. And Harvard recently hosted a unique type of tournament called the UTR Boston Open. And so Dave's going to be talking with us today about that tournament, what sets it apart, what they learned, and what they have planned for future events that are modeled after this event. And I'm really looking forward to picking his brain on this. It's something that has been a long time in the planning, and so it's nice to finally see it come to fruition. And I'm sure we're going to learn a lot from Dave, as I always do when I have the opportunity to chat with him. Before I bring him on the line, though, a couple things. One, the next 2 weeks, I will be off the air. I will be getting my son settled into college, and for those of you who saw today's post on parentingaces.com, you can read the rest of what the next couple weeks has in store for me. But I hope you'll use this time to catch up on maybe some old podcasts that you missed or some old articles that you may have missed, and really maybe take the time to put together some questions that you may have for me or for experts that I've had on the show or that I've interviewed for the website. And y'all know I'm always happy to share your questions and do my best to get answers for you if I can't provide them myself. So please take the time and go back and catch up a little bit. You can find all of our podcasts either on the radio show podcast link on parentingaces.com or on YouTube. You can search for the Parenting Aces channel, and our podcasts are housed there as well. So enjoy them, and I look forward to hearing your feedback on anything you may have missed. So before I bring Dave on the air, I'm going to play a quick commercial, and when we come back, Dave Fish discussing the UTR Boston Open.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and as I mentioned before the break, we have with us today Dave Fish, the men's tennis coach at Harvard University, but also a real proponent for level-based play for our juniors, and he's going to be sharing with us last weekend's UTR Boston Open, which sounds like it was just an amazing event, and I'm really excited to have him on. If you'd like to call in and chat with us today, that number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. And let me get Dave on the line with us. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for having me today.
Well, thanks for doing this so last minute. I appreciate you much.
Not at all. Well, you've been a great help in spreading the word about this tournament. So it was really exciting for us to sort of initiate this, basically this format that we believe is going to help us revolutionize American tennis and creating more opportunity for more kids to develop faster, less expensively. Hopefully it'll pave the way for having many more players come into the game that we have really sort of ruled out largely. So it's a very exciting thing. And as you mentioned, the premise is to lead to a format that gives more kids a chance to enter a tournament at a place where they will have a sense of earned accomplishment. Instead of putting everybody in at the same place where half the kids lose and then they go start their real tournament in the back draw.
Right. So. Right. Well, we know that Northern California has offered some level-based tournaments over the past couple years. And I think they've, you know, had some good success with that. I'd love to hear from you, first of all, a little bit about the format that you guys used last weekend, and also what's different about the UTR Boston Open as compared to just a regular junior tennis tournament.
Great. Terrific. Well, two really good questions. One is, this format was modeled on what's called a tableau draw, which is used in France, where they might have a tournament that goes as long as a month, and lower-rated players all come in and play someone near their level in the opening qualifying rounds. And then each week they advance further until they reach their limit and they lose to someone. But better players, meanwhile, are entering the draw at subsequent rounds. And finally, the tournament culminates at the end of up to a month, where a pro might come in the quarterfinals, not have to play any of the matches beforehand, but play in the quarterfinals for real prize money. So essentially what the French tournament system does is it lines up the carrots or the incentives for players at every level to try to get to the next level. When Northern Cal has done the level-based play, they've used Universal to seed draws, to select players to go into, say, a 16-person or a 32-person tournament. But until recently, we haven't been able to explore the full tableau approach. So what we were excited about in Boston is we had a qualifier on Thursday night. I think we had about 29 people come in and play a qualifier on Thursday at Harvard, including three of our players. And then eight winners from that qualifying draw joined 16 qualifiers at a second round or a third round on Friday. And then they all played down to a round of 16, where the eight winners from that qualifying draw joined other players in the main draw on Saturday. So at every level, players came in, they got a chance to play someone that they were presumably maybe a little better than, or someone that was a little better than them. And then they got the chance to advance to the next day. So we had pretty much every flavor of tennis player that still wanted to compete. We had junior players from New England. We had junior players from outside the region who heard about it. We had Division III players coming from colleges around the area. We had Division I players from our team. We had a Sri Lankan Davis Cup player who is currently an active player on the Sri Lanka Davis Cup team. We had a former pro player, Marcus Fugate, comes from Rochester, New York, who won, I think, four futures last year. Throughout the weekend, we had players coming in who heard about it and say, boy, I wish I'd heard about this. We even had an ITF, a young woman, Maria Mateus, who is a very highly ranked ITF player, and she played in the event. We had other women who were playing on the pro tour at a sort of challenger level, and they said, boy, if they'd known about it, they would have loved to have played. So at every level, that kind of fit our dream of creating a local event where more people from these different bandwidths of ability could play in a satisfying, engaging event. And at the end, the parents were raving about it, and the pros were loving the prize money. College players were losing to the pros, so they were happy because they got competition without having to leave Boston. So at every level, it was a pretty exciting event.
That's very cool. So let me just ask about some of the nuts and bolts of the tournament. First of all,
sure.
Was this a USTA-sanctioned event?
It was not. And our premise really has been that back in the 70s, when tennis was really booming, is that there were hundreds and hundreds of non-sanctioned events. Many of the people that got their start and later found their way to USTA events found their way initially into competition in unsanctioned events where they simply played locally. They got to play against often older, stronger, smarter players. And the ones that did well could go on to USTA events. And so we've felt that we're basically marginalizing a large part of the population that would like to play in events like this. But if they go into a USTA, say an age-based junior event, they often get killed. They don't know where to find a good match. And that becomes a disincentive for sticking with the system. We noticed that in France, whereas our system tends to reward the top 20% of the players who go on to do well, but discourage the next 60%, say, down, the French system continues to give all those people a satisfying. And I think that's what's changed, Lisa, is the notion that we used to have of a tournament was, let's figure out who's the best person in the tournament, and that's the point of a tournament. Nowadays, mm-hmm. if the customer is king, we have a chance to give more people in the tournament a satisfying experience. And as we know, we're losing players at probably 38% churn rate from junior events. We think that it's not because tennis is not fun anymore. We think tennis is more fun than it's ever been. But we think that the hoops that we ask the kids to jump through and the travel that we ask of them and the school that we ask them to miss, they finally get a little tired of doing that. And if you go out to a basketball public park, kids are playing and they're just playing all day. Tennis players will play all day if you give them a chance to, but we think that this kind of format makes it possible for them to do it more easily with fewer sacrifices.
Right, right. And it's interesting because when the USTA kind of tweaked the junior comp structure a couple years ago, one of the reasons given for the tweaks was to reduce the cost and to reduce the number of days missed. And what we've seen as a result is shorter tournaments with larger draws requiring the players to play more matches in a day. And I don't have any numbers to back this up, but I'm just based on my own experience, going to say that we're seeing more kids get injured as a result of that type of structure. So what UTR and you and I don't know who else was behind the creation of this event, but it seems to me what y'all have done is address those two concerns of reducing cost and reducing school days missed, but done it in a very unique manner and kind of thought outside the box and came up with something that's working in another country that some would argue, okay, that's great, it works in France. France is a very different geographic region than the U.S. You can't translate what's going on in France and make it work here. But it seems to me the UTR Boston Open disproves that statement.
Yes, I think essentially we can say there are cultural differences between France and the United States. That's absolutely true. But essentially the French model works on regional tours. And regional in the United States really means metropolitan. In France, regional simply means you can drive an hour one direction or another and find up to three tournaments a week. That would not be possible in the United States the way we presently have organized tennis. But with the universal approach, it's possible to create almost cascading draws that allow juniors in an area to play in on a Thursday night or even a Wednesday night, presumably, or you could have a draw of a lower level be starting the weekend before and have the kids finish up on Sunday and know that they've earned a spot in the qualifier of the next round tournament down the road. So the really nice part about it is that kids can get a much easier diet of good competition through this kind of local event, which is very similar to what France is doing, and which I think our event proved wonderfully. And in no way are we saying the USTA events are not good. They're terrific, but a lot of people are not able to play those formats. Juniors, for instance, during the summer might not be able to afford to go travel long distances. And so when you build these kind of, let's call them metropolitan-sized circuits, then you make it possible for people who can't travel extensively to play quite a bit right close to home. The other thing that you were getting to is that with the universal formats, since everybody is being rated on the universal tennis ratings, it doesn't really matter because it's not based on a points per round system. You don't have the same problem in having three or four levels of qualifier into the tournament. The USTA tournaments have a hard time because if they have many different levels of entry, they're not sure how to award points for advancing or how to run a backdraw or even how many matches do you have to play in a day. We've tried to set up the universal so that you would have, on a given draw of 16, you could have a simple four matches over a weekend. That's a manageable amount of tennis, and it's probably not going to injure anybody. So we tried to look right at what's a practical amount of tennis. And the other thing, Lisa, you're very patient in listening. Thank you. And you can stop me at any time. But the other premise about this, the universal footprint on a tournament, is that it actually allows us to spread tournaments around. When we think that everybody has to enter a size 64 draw on the same day, we have to find a massive facility and essentially find someone who's willing to give up their club entirely, tell their members to go away, essentially. With Universal, you can have flighted draws, an A draw, a B draw that have 16 players each. If you don't have time to run the qualifying series of draws locally, everybody gets a certain amount of play. They don't get overplayed. And the person that wins the B draw one weekend is probably going to watch his rating rise up enough so that he can get into the A draw the next weekend. So it continues to be a sort of tiered system, almost like a trout ladder, where you just keep jumping up the next level. If you get to that next level and you've got any energy left, you can jump up to the next level. And so instead of setting an arbitrary number of points or a number of events that you have to play, you're simply playing in a sort of mastery ladder that helps you progress according to your ability.
Great. Let me ask you another nuts and bolts question. What type of scoring format was used?
We used NOAD. We played regular sets, but we played a match tiebreak for the third set just to keep everybody playing the same approximate amount of time. I think one of the things that's most difficult about our junior system is that we can ask kids to play two matches a day. One kid can play a three-hour match, and another kid could either get a default or an injury or win in an hour. And then those kids have to go and play. And I think we see a lot of maybe unexpected results in tournaments because of the unfairness of our system. I can't really name another sport aside from baseball that has multiple contests in a day and has those contests be of such varying length. If you look at soccer or basketball or swimming, track, anything like that, the events are all essentially the same length of time. So mm-hmm. I think down the road we're going to see some more experiment I don't know if you've heard of this Fast Four tennis that Australian Association tried.
Yeah,
they did exhibition with Federer and Leighton Hewitt, and people loved it. Scotland now is going to start experimenting with it. Around the edges, you're seeing people experiment with the formats because we have a game. You know, I was transfixed by that match the other night with Federer and Djokovic, but I had my computer in my lap and I was doing emails as I went because nobody has time to spend 5 hours watching a match anymore. And so what we've all tried to look at, and you've seen the college tennis now has gone to NOAD tennis, is that we're treating people's time as more important than ever, and that we believe that we can keep more people in the game if we give them a reasonable competitive contest, one that doesn't ask them for a long, undefined amount of time, and which doesn't injure them. And we think it's going to keep more people in the game longer and happier.
In Georgia, I don't know if you saw my recent article, but in Georgia, USTA is piloting a short scoring format where each set is played to four, but three sets are played. So if the player split sets, instead of playing a 10-point breaker, they play another set to four. Personally,
I love that.
I hate it. Well, you love it. I hate it. I know we're going to come down on different sides of this one. And that's what makes tennis so great, because we can have these conversations. And, you know, I'm a traditionalist with the scoring. I grew up playing 2 out of 3 sets, you know, regular scoring, no tiebreak. I mean, we played a tiebreaker at 6-all, but there was no such thing as a match tiebreak. There was no such thing as no-ad scoring. And I you know, that's what I love. But it's interesting to read the debate.
Well, it is interesting. And I think that I would simply add that things have changed in tennis. 25 years ago, when Wielander and Lendl played a finals in the U.S. Open, it went 4 hours and 15 minutes. And we said, OMG, how can this be? This has
we
never
didn't say
happened
that.
Before.
That lingo didn't exist back then.
Well, you're right. Pardon me for my anachronism here. But now we can see a finals of an Australian Open go 6 hours and 15 minutes. We can watch the women's finals where Vanderbilt won in the NCAA team championship. That also went 6 hours and 15 minutes. We can watch a match between Isner and Mahut play go 11 hours. The tennis is better than it's ever been. Its athletes are better. They're stronger. They keep the rallies going longer. And if we don't recognize the reality of that change, we are inadvertently, I think, shooting ourselves in the foot. So I totally agree with, I love the drama of a great deuce ad. But the women had a game in the finals in the NCAAs. They had one game that lasted 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I watched that game online. It was awesome.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
How many people do? We're watching a lot of people not watch that. And the impact on the student athlete, if we want kids to, you know, we're experimenting with 2-hour formats where young kids can come in and play something and they're done in 2 hours. People simply don't have the free time that they used to have. So I think we're looking at tennis either evolving or beginning to be more marginalized. And I actually think that rather than squabbling over formats, I think if we can look at intelligent new templates for how to bring people into healthy competition, like this UTR Boston Open, then I think we actually have much more common ground and many more people that were fans of it. I didn't mention this, but we had a couple of guys that had played D3 college for Bates and Colby up in Maine, and they just chanced through and they said, oh my gosh, I would love to get in this. How do I find out about this? I'd play this all the time. We had another young man who had graduated from college who lived in New Hampshire. He said, I try to find the men's opens, but I go into the men's opens and I play 3 bad matches and then I finally get to a good match. I can't find the competition. So I don't think that the desire for competition has disappeared. I think we haven't given the customer what they need to really keep playing it and finding a lot of good matches.
One other thing that was really unique about the UTR Boston Open in terms of what we're used to in junior tennis is the fact that men and women were in the draw together, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, talk about that a little bit and the challenges that presents and the problems that it maybe solves.
Well, I think we're looking at it, and the founder, Dave Howell, down in Virginia, was, I think, just brilliant about this in several ways. One is he made a system that was based on games won versus games lost. And so aspirationally, people have a reason to fight for every game. We were with Billie Jean King this last weekend down at the Open, and she just loves it because that's been her whole premise. She also loves the idea of men and women competing together because that's the world that we live in. And the third reason that Dave Howell said was that in areas of the country where you don't have a critical mass of players at a certain level, there are many places that boys and girls, men and women could be competing on the same court. And if you'd watched this very lovely young lady, Maria Mateus, compete, she was giving the guys hell, and it was a great match. She was having fun. They were having fun. It was a really nice thing to see, and we would hope to see more of that, because if you can't get the critical mass of players together, by all means, let's have men and women play together. Nobody's trying to force it as much as say, hey, if it's possible, let's do it, and I think it's more fun for people. I think the other thing we see is that typically, if I talk to many of the women who developed as pros, they grew up with a diet of playing against men because it was much easier to find other men than it was to find other women their level. So I think there's a real plus to it.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. And to be honest, I'm not sure exactly how I feel about the men and the women in the draw together. I see mm-hmm. both sides of the argument. But one thing that I hear in opposition to this type of format is, how can it be healthy for a young developing male player to risk losing to a girl? So I'm throwing that out there. Don't hate me.
Because this is
something I hear. and I think it's important for us to address that concern.
I think
from an ego standpoint.
Question. Yeah. No, I think it's terrific, because we actually had the coaches of the players who drew Maria talk to their players beforehand. And just so that there wouldn't be any kind of awkwardness to it. And the guys handled it really well. And so I guess I would say that this kind of thing is going to be more a one-off than it is going to become the norm. I think women are still going to have their own competitions. I think that it simply allows you to have a little more culture locally where people have some fun playing in against each other. I don't think we're suddenly going to see this on the ATP Tour, and I don't think we're going to suddenly replace women's rankings or your girls' rankings. I just think that where it's possible, and you can say you're in an area, say you're in Nebraska where they only have 8 players, and you've got a good female player and she can beat up on some of these kids and not have to travel to California to get a good match, I think this just makes it possible for more families to stay in the game. So we mm-hmm. actually saw that people, I think people get over it, honestly. And if people don't like it, they don't have to play. But
right.
I sure as heck think that people loved it. So I don't know what to say.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's interesting. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that this was on the radar, that you guys were aware that this might be an issue for some of the players. And so, you know, you prepared the coaches ahead of time and asked them to prepare their players ahead of time for playing a strong female player. And, you know, it's one of my big issues with all the changes we've seen in tennis has been the fact that I don't feel like the consumer, the public, has been adequately prepped to accept the changes. And so for me, the fact that you guys talked to the coaches and had the coaches talk to the players shows that you're taking the time to adequately introduce this concept and prepare those who are going to be affected by it. And you know, I think that's a precursor to seeing positive results from any kind of change we see. So kudos for that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I think you're completely right about that. And I think that what we've always tried to do is take the universal approach, which is let's make the customer's experience better. So that Universal is developed because it's done a lot of listening to what's the pain that people are feeling. People are definitely feeling a pain on too little time these days. People are feeling a pain on too few good competitive matches. They're feeling a pain about missing school. But they also want to aspire as high as they can. And so if we make it possible, if you think about it, I'll go backwards. It's something in sociology called the silent witness. And essentially it says the person who's not at the table doesn't get to tell you how he or she feels. And we've got a lot of tennis players who don't ever get to the table. And I think that when if we can kind of create this thriving ecosystem at a local level, imagine what happens, Lisa, if we begin to spread these templates in an easily accessible way where everybody in the country is rated. High school players now know exactly what kind of event they can get into without being discouraged by playing an age-based USTA event too quickly before they're really ready for it. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you've got tennis on campus. We've got 38,000 kids playing tennis on campus who still love to play and just aren't willing to play it at a professional level or not good enough to play it at a 20-hour-a-week professional level in college. And so what to me is so exciting and exhilarating about watching this take off is that we're actually connecting. Universal Tennis is really the circulatory system for allowing tennis's different organs to begin connecting with each other again. High school tennis could connect with tennis on campus. College, it can connect with varsity tennis. Juniors can connect with varsity tennis. We can keep people like Marcus Fugate, who is a very fine pro. And honestly, we need him to be beating up on our college players and our 16-year-old rising juniors.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is what's exciting, is we once you create this connective tissue again, there's no telling what kind of events can come up in Atlanta, in Boston, in Los Angeles. Coming out of high schools in the summer, tennis on campus programs where they're playing a local club. Everybody knows where they stand because we've got a common language.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, it's funny because one of my little side projects that I recently took on is a Facebook group trying to get people to join and arrange match play. And it's like pulling teeth. I've got so far, I think 142 people in the group, but only like 15 of them have added their name to this document to, put themselves out there to arrange hitting sessions and match play together. I would love to appeal to you and to the organizers of these tournaments to please encourage the people that are signing up for the tournaments to join this match playlist so that they can do the same thing without having to be part of an organized tournament week after week after week. They can still seek out competition. And, one of the reasons behind all this is simply watching my son these last few weeks that he's waiting to go to college, and watching him arrange match play every day. And it's just been great for him. He gets a lot done in a much shorter period of time as opposed to being at drills on a daily basis. And, he's playing former college players. He's playing high school kids. He's, playing more casual players. He's played against adults. I mean, it's been a phenomenal opportunity for him and helping him get ready to face the rigors of what's coming starting next Monday. Holy cow.
That's right. Get your Kleenex out.
Yes, seriously.
Well, I think you're hitting on something really, really critical, Lisa, is that the reason we've talked about UTR as being sort of the SAT of tennis is that having a common language is what you need to make your Facebook page practical. And all around the world, we're seeing people trying to create that, the advantages of people coming together for more opportunities where they find it easier to get with a get with a partner of comparable ability, because it's really not fun if you go to your club and they don't know who you are and they say, here, let me set you up, and you it's a complete mismatch, and it takes you another 6 weeks before you actually know enough people to do it. Well,
right.
The beauty of having a universal rating is that everybody knows where they stand. So you don't waste a lot of time trying to find that. And so imagine if instead of yourself and people in San Francisco where they're doing one in Israel, everybody's trying to come up with something, but essentially there's no common language.
Mm-hmm.
And so without the common language, we really don't have a way to do this efficiently. And that's what Universal's striving to do. It's already rating 207,000 players in the world. It's already got almost 2.5 million results in it. That the essentially it allows us to have a way to interact with each other, which we don't have now. And so it's a much bigger vision than, say, just the USTA having a domestic rating system or France having a domestic rating system. It's a global approach that actually allows, eventually, will allow people to receive notifications. Hey, Lisa's running she's going to have something at her club on Sunday afternoon. This is just your level. Wouldn't that be nice to be able to reach people that easily?
Sure.
And so at every level, we see this being the connective tissue in the same way that the internet has made it possible for us to connect socially, commercially, educationally. At every level, without the internet, we couldn't connect that way. And tennis, in effect, has been missing that connectivity. We've all tried to do it with our local efforts, but if we had the local efforts bolstered by this interconnective ability to have a universal passport, that whether your son goes to Atlanta or he goes to Copenhagen, he still knows where he fits, and he can find
right.
other people who are in the system. That's the beauty. That's where we think that we can help bring back a resurgence of tennis.
So what's on the books in terms of future events like this? Where is this UTR Boston Open leading?
It's a great question. We see it in France. I'll give you a for instance. If they have a future or a challenger in France, the French system actually has found that they almost organically they've designed events before the future and after the future so that the pros that lose early in a future or challenger can go into these prize money events locally and still make more money. So instead of having to travel to another country to go find another future, they've found something that in effect is complementary to the competition they were already traveling there for. So what I've been talking with Eric Buderak, who's the president of the ATP Players Council. And we have a what we call the college series. I think it's I don't know whether they're futures or challengers. I think they're challengers on the at UVA and then Tennessee and then Illinois. And imagine what it would be like if you created bookend UTR Opens before and after those events. So juniors, not just the pros, could go and play with the hope that they would get to play the college players. And the college players have the hope that they'd get to play the pros. And you get people like Tommy Paul and Riley Opelka and people who are climbing their way up through the futures into the main tour. Imagine if all of the juniors who presently can't get into those events or might be able to get into a qualifier, imagine if they had an event before that they could try to get into, and then that the winner of that event, UTR Open, could get a wild card into the future or the challenger. And then imagine that when the pros lose early in the challenger, they know that the next UTR Open is holding 4 qualifying spots for them to come in the quarterfinals to make $1,000 prize money. All of a sudden, now you've made it possible for our young pros who are trying to scrape by and make a living. And we know they can't make a living unless they're in the top 100. we're making it possible for all of those pros to have more access to more affordable competition in a way that not only are they paying their bills more effectively and more so, but they're also part of a pipeline in inspiring all of our upcoming 16, 17, and 18-year-old and college players to keep trying. So,
which is interesting because this is one of the things that Martin Blackman, the new head of USTA Player Development, has said. He wants to keep our retired pros, our former college players, engaged in the game with the juniors. So it sounds like this format is the answer to just that question.
It is, and that's been the whole premise. And Martin is one of the first people. We met with him 3 years ago and described this vision, and he saw it right away. So we're delighted that he's in this position. But he understands the motivational value for having those pros interacting with the young players. And we believe that this actually, and you and I have talked about this before, but instead of having this polarized talk about all the international players that are playing on college campuses, let's instead look at those college players as a huge asset, but unused asset in the United States tennis, because all of our 16-year-olds should be playing against them. I had a player from my team this summer who went to France, and he normally would have tried to qualify for futures. And he called me from France. He was so excited. "Dave, I'm so happy you encouraged me to go to this. There's nothing like this in the United States. I'm playing three times more matches than I would have in the United States. And my confidence is just going through the roof." We can build that here in the United States, Lisa. We just have to deploy our resources a little bit differently. And Martin is one of those guys that recognizes that and understands that, and I've said this to you before, but we've collectively, into a Marcus Fugate who won our tournament this weekend, our system collectively, whether you went to college or went to the USTA paid for him, we've put easily $500,000 into developing that player. And that player then has the tennis equivalent of a degree from the Harvard Business School. And we cannot afford to throw out that talent. We need to find them ways to keep involved and let them be the mentors and give our 16-year-olds a kick in the butt and give the college players a kick in the butt. And then turn around our college players and say, "Hey, become part of developing that American pathway, the American juniors who are around your city." And instead of having your best players be playing with foam balls with kids in play days, which is great, but if you got your best players and they could be incentives for the local juniors, as what happened in the Boston Open this weekend, so be it. That's a much better use of talent. The whole fabric of this connects in an exciting way. And we appreciate your telling the story, because this is how it happens. Tennis is going to grow because people with local passions, local facilities, local sponsors, it's easy to come up with that short money for these UTR-type opens, and that's when the game starts to take off again.
Let me ask you another nuts and bolts question. What was the entry fee for the tournament, and did it differ based on at which stage you entered the event?
No, it didn't. It was $40.
Okay.
And Universal Tennis put up the whatever we didn't make out of the entry fees. They said, "We'll back you for that," because it was a wonderful testing place for it. And we believe that, and that's what the French system does. They basically have players, club players, playing in for 2 weeks before the main event. So they have enough to, you know, maybe the club throws in $1,000 for it. But the whole thing is almost self-sustaining. And if you think how much more easily we could sustain tournaments like that than by having futures where everybody's got to travel a great distance, stay in a hotel, I think we just have magnified the cost and priced a lot of people out of the game. Mm-hmm. So,
and let me ask you another question. Sorry to cut you off, but but I do have to end right at noon today because I have a match at 12:15. I have to get.
Yeah. Good for you.
We're having gorgeous weather here, so I'm gonna go take advantage. But so you keep mentioning prize money. I just, if you could put on your college coach hat for 1 second, can you talk about the NCAA rules about accepting prize money and why we're not having to worry about this?
Well, it's a great question, and I'm not sure I have a definitive answer for you as to whether the college players can take their expenses back. We're still waiting for a clarification, but there's certainly no impact on their eligibility if they don't accept that. We're actually working collectively with the ITA, Tim Russell and Erica Perkins Jasper, as well as the NCAA and the USTA to appeal, to get a task force together to appeal to the NCAA to say, look, if we want to make player development better and more possible for more American kids, we need to relax the rules a little bit. We're already saying it's okay for a junior to make up to $10,000 of undocumented prize money because of the expenses of developing. That $10,000 would never offset what you paid for your son in a year.
No. No.
And that's clear. And so once we recognize that the new normal is that nobody's making money off this, then we ought to modernize our rules for college players to simply make it possible for them to play in the events, to get their expenses back. If their school is paying for it, they've got nothing to get back. But if they're paying on their own and they've got expenses for stringing or they flew there, well, they should be able to keep that. And then we keep more people in the whole system longer. Essentially,
it might serve to keep the college players, the top college players, in college, as opposed to going a year or two and then turning pro.
I agree. I'll give you a for instance, and I won't name this player, but he's a friend, and he's probably about 200 in the world. He made $40,000 last year. There is no way that his expenses were under that. So if the top 200th player in the world can't make the money, don't we really need to look at our system and say our system presently is unsustainable? If you don't have giant sponsors or say that drove up, what would happen to tennis? And so my assertion is that we can actually begin to retool our system just in a very gradual way to build more of these UTR-type opens so that it makes it more possible for our players like that player who's ranked 200 in the world to pay his expenses and better, because those players, if we can keep them in the game and happy, then you won't, as a parent, have to pay as much to develop your son.
And the reality is that a player coming out on tour shouldn't expect, under our current system, to be in the black for, 3 years? Aren't we seeing, I don't know the exact data. You probably do. You're a numbers guy, Dave.
Yeah, no, I'm not a numbers guy, but I appreciate your saying that. it's really preposterous, Lisa, that we have tournaments that are rewarding the very top players as much as they're making, and so little comes down to the players that are essentially the foundation that are supporting that platform. Mm-hmm. And so in any other sport, 500 people, 1,000 people are making a living, a good living. So when we say it should, nobody should count on getting into the black in under 3 years, well, we've just gotten used to that. That's not the way it has to be. That's just what we've gotten used to. And we say, well, I guess that's the way it is. And we accept it. I don't accept that. I think
the reality is, I don't think any other profession, well, at least none that I can think of off the top of my head, would expect you to pay money to be part of the profession for 3+ years before you have the opportunity to actually come out ahead.
Precisely. And look at
sports
the team
or
sports.
No.
Yeah. Just about anything. If you played on a basketball team or a football team, those expenses are picked up. The coaching expenses are largely picked up. I know people get into their own football coaches nowadays, but essentially there are a lot of people who don't have a lot of money who are still able to come up through those pathways.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that pathway now. It simply is not affordable. And I think the major correctives that we need to make are through this UTR Open type of approach. And I don't mean you have to call it the UTR Open. It could be anybody. You know, I'd love to see the coaches at Illinois and Tennessee and UVA get some of their local sponsors to say, hey, we're going to run these tournaments and bracket the tournament you're running and make it possible for 100 people to play in that wouldn't now get into the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just rebooting the system. It's all there. We've got fantastic college facilities all over the country. And coaches who are ready and sort of ready to embrace this. So anyway, you've heard it. You're patient, but I think it's an exciting time for American tennis, and we're lucky to have someone like Martin Blackman, who understands the deeper picture that we could, if we can have 1,000 people playing seriously at a higher level, that's got to produce more players. The way Europe is producing it. They simply, right, years ago, created the Tennis Europe circuit for the 14 and under, and it's basically a giant nursery. And then it's a nursery for pros. We just haven't done that.
Right. All right,
and
let's get back.
This could be our nursery.
Yeah. Let's get back to practical matters because we're coming toward the end of the show. So,
sure.
First of all, when is the next one of these events? Is there a next one planned?
Well, we're going to start to talk to coaches. It will depend in winter time when indoor court time is more precious. We believe that we can build these events on it using a smaller footprint. And we also believe that we can get more clubs to participate in them because it's very simple to say on Thursday night we'll have this club out in Wayland, Massachusetts, host the qualifying round. And on Friday, another club could host the qualifying round. And on Saturday, we could host the quarters and the finals in that. So this, I see areas working more collaboratively with each other to reduce the impact on any one club, but to still make it possible for these things to be running. Imagine if we had one of these events each month, how much easier would that make it for juniors to come along, or college players who might be sitting on the bench, not getting enough matches? I think that's the
fantastic plan,
but we're a little ways away from that, but we need help from all of your listeners and the college coaches who are getting really excited about this and seeing the potential for it.
And so how does a player find out about this event? Because you said, you know, you had players coming through last weekend that were like, oh, shoot, I wish I had known. I would have signed up. How does one find out about these?
Well, right now,
or how will one
hard.
Find out about them?
How one will find out eventually, because anybody can have a free basic membership to Universal Tennis at no cost. And so once someone is in the system, when we migrate the Universal platform to a more scalable platform. Right now, the platform that people are using, as we joke about it, it's a platform that only a mother could love. It's not modern by any standard. It's not got a user experience by any standard. The best thing about it is you know that it works. And so we will now migrate that to a scalable website where it has areas for personal profiles, and that we will then be able to send people notice about these tournaments as they're popping up. And so that's the connectivity that I'm talking about that makes it all mm-hmm. possible for you to get your and play group together in Atlanta for us to run a tournament up here in Boston. And for us to then and for players to say, hey, I'm a level 10. Tell me what's out there that I could actually get to, or I'm going to San Francisco over Christmas. Is there a UTR event type where I could find my level and not have to, you know, waste all my time calling people that don't know me? Right. So that's the picture down the road, and we believe that that connectivity is what modern tools allow us to do that could not have been done 10, 15 years ago. So we're just at a unique intersection in time.
So we just need to be patient for a little longer.
Yes. Yeah, I wish we didn't, but we in the music industry, you may get a kick out of this, in the music industry, you've seen these songs that someone uploaded onto YouTube and then someone else hears it and it gets played in clubs, but it never goes through the record, you know, the standard record companies.
Right.
And then one day someone falls in love with it who's a writer for Grey's Anatomy, and they play it on Grey's Anatomy, and all of a sudden people say, holy cow, this is a great song. And that, in the music industry, that's called a slow-breaking hit. And so we think that UTR is a slow-breaking hit. It's been passed around by word of mouth on very limited marketing budget, almost non-existent marketing budget. But because it works, it's something that gives us all a sense of hope that, gee, there may be a better future for tennis out here instead of all the doom and gloom that everybody's talking about at the Tennis Industry Association meetings.
Right.
And that's the beauty of us all kind of helping. You've been great in helping to spread the word about it. But that's the fun thing about it, is it's not a national mandate where we're saying, hey, we've decided what's best for you. It's simply a tool that we're all finding a use for, each in our own way. As a college coach, I have a use for it. Your son had a use for it. You will have a use for it in putting your practice groups together. Player development in the USTA will have a use for it. Down the road, when we're comparing U.S. development players versus Australian, player development will have a use for it. Everybody will be able to get data out of this system that they couldn't get otherwise. And that's why we think of ourselves as sort of an international resource, that if it's built independently, it's going to be able to move faster than any of these existing organizations that have their own set of problems and committees. We just think we will do it better, faster, at a much lower cost using modern business tools.
Fantastic. So for my listeners that are interested in staying abreast of all of this, is there one place they should make sure they check, or do I have your assurance that you'll pass along info to me and I can post it on Parenting
Absolutely.
Aces?
We will keep you in the loop for sure.
Okay.
And
great.
And we appreciate it. And anybody is welcome to write us. They can write directly to universaltennis.com. They're welcome to sign up for free. Full disclosure is that Universal's business model allows it to stay in business and keep amassing more and more data to help us all by offering some very moderately priced monthly fees. We joke it's the price of a latte at Starbucks, or maybe two lattes at Starbucks if you want to see the college filters.
Right.
But it really, you know, when you think about what you're paying in tennis costs year round, it's a very nominal cost for a terrific tool. So we're pretty idealistic about this and have tried to position this as something that will really make American tennis better. And so we love it. We're getting more and more fans every day, and college coaches love it. And we see the system getting better through efforts like yours and ours and more
fantastic.
To come.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, Dave, thanks so much for doing the show today, and congratulations on a great event. To my listeners, please remember that I will not be doing a show the next couple weeks as I'm traveling and getting my son settled into school, but I'll be back the beginning of October, so stay tuned to Parenting Aces for updates there. Dave, great talking to you as always, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks so much, Lisa, and thanks for all your help.
Thank you. Have a great week,
Take
everybody.
Care.